Following episode of K-Voice was recorded at 5:24 p.m., May 15th, 2017. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show. Enjoy the show.
People have got to know. People have got to know.
I have nothing to do with Russia.
Whether or not their president is a crook.
I have no investments in Russia.
Well, I'm not a crook.
None whatsoever. I don't have property in Russia. I'm in total compliance in every way.
Their president is a crook.
It is designed to bribe the executive if he engages in excesses. A president swollen with power and grown tyrannical, and preservation of the independence of the executive.
Hello, and thank you for listening to K-Voice of the Resistance. That's the letter K, Voice of Resistance. Should you hear me talk about something that interests you, you might be able to find that story on my Facebook page at K-Voice of Resistance. Also, follow me on Twitter at Kelly the Voice. Well, Congress is back in session this week. Yay! There are so many bills up for a vote. There is one of them that's on my radar on Thursday. It's H.R. 115, the Thin Blue Line Act. This bill would make murder or attempted murder of a police officer, firefighter, or first responder an aggravating factor in death penalty determinations. This Republican-sponsored bill is red meat for the Republican punitive bloodlust. I don't think we should make something that's already a crime worse because of the status or occupation of a victim, especially when considering a sentence as controversial as the death penalty. It perpetuates the myth that the police are under attack. Furthermore, with the number of false accounts reported by the police, I am not comfortable with imposing death sentences at the police or anyone's word. Ever, really. According to Amnesty International, capital punishment does not work. There is a wealth of mounting evidence that proves this fact. The death penalty, both in the U.S. and around the world, is discriminatory and is used disproportionately against the poor, minorities, and members of racial, ethnic, and religious communities. Since humans are fallible, the risk of executing the innocent can never be eliminated. Furthermore, the astronomical cost associated with putting a person on death row, including criminal investigations, lengthy trials, and appeals, are leading many states to reevaluate and reconsider having this flawed and unjust system on the books. 77% of death penalty victims are white, regardless of the fact that African Americans make up about half of homicide victims. I've put up a PDF of capital punishment facts on my Facebook page, K Voice of Resistance, should you like to view it, share it, or use it.
Free our people!
Right now!
Free our people!
Wheelchairs line the streets of Washington, D.C. on Monday. Disabled Americans chain themselves to the fence in front of the White House with a demand of our government. Disabled Americans are routinely forced into nursing facilities and institutions where they are stripped of their personal liberties. They have essentially been deemed too disabled to live in their communities, go to school, work, marry, or establish a home and bring up children. This is unacceptable and truly un-American. For over a quarter of a century, ADAPT, a national grassroots community that organizes disability rights, and the disability community have fought to ensure that no American is denied their constitutionally guaranteed liberty and forced into unwanted institutionalization. These ADAPT activists engage in nonviolent action, including civil disobedience, to assure the civil and human rights of people with disabilities to live in freedom. ADAPT is an inspiration to the resistance. S-910 is in committee. That is the Disability Integration Act. It is civil rights legislation introduced by Senator Chuck Schumer. It addresses the fundamental issue that people who need long-term services and supports face institutionalization and loss of basic civil rights. As the Disability Integration Act, S-910, moves through the Senate, contact your senator to support it. It is the least we can do for those members of our society all too often neglected by our community.
If you are a drug trafficker, we will not look the other way. We will not be willfully blind to your misconduct.
So I was chatting with a fellow activist, Lauren von Bernuth of Citizen Truth and the Baseline Project. And you know what is pissing us off? Okay, well, a lot of things are pissing us off. But this week, it is, why is there a war on drugs but not a war on rapists? When Brock Turner, the Stanford rapist, got 6 months in jail and only served 3, he actually served a longer sentence than most rapists. People accused of rape are never found guilty. The Rape Abuse and Incest Network estimates 97 of 100 avoid punishment. According to the most recent BJS analysis of America's 75 largest countries, about 84% of convicted rapists in 2009 were sentenced to prison, but only 5% were sent to jail. 11% received probation or other. I would say that there is no war on rapists because 57% of rapists are white and only 27% are black. That argument doesn't hold because more whites do drugs than blacks and other minorities, and there's still a war on drugs. According to a 2011 survey from the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, the most recent data available, nearly 20% of whites have used cocaine, compared to blacks and Latinos. Higher percentages of whites have also tried hallucinogens, marijuana, pain relievers like Oxycontin, and stimulants like methamphetamine. Crack is more popular among blacks than whites, but not by much. Still, blacks are arrested for drug possession more than 3 times as often as whites, according to a 2009 report from the advocacy group Human Rights Watch. We spend over $51 billion total on the drug war. We spent over $1 trillion since the beginning of the war on drugs during Richard Nixon's presidency. 1.55 million Americans were arrested in 2012 alone on nonviolent drug charges. Treatment, instead of incarceration of drug abusers, would save us billions of dollars thanks to lower incarceration rates, lower recidivism, and increased employment among addicts, according to a study done by the Partnership for Drug-Free Kids. And, you know, logic. Former prosecutor John Amabile explains why we need to treat drug addiction as a health issue and not a criminal one.
A huge percentage of the murder cases I'm involved in have some kind of illegal drug distribution component. Drug policy kills more people than the drugs themselves. In 1900, when you could buy heroin in a Sears mail order catalog, the government statistics were that approximately 1.3% of the U.S. population had a drug addiction problem. In 2010, after a 40-year war on drugs, the government estimates that about 1.3% of the population has a drug addiction problem. The statistics are identical. 100 million Americans have admitted they've used illegal drugs. It isn't like a fringe element that's doing it. If you regulated them as a health issue instead of as a criminal moral issue, you could much more effectively regulate them. When you talk to a group of people, liberal or conservative, old or young, and they listen to the facts, they come out of there saying, wow, this really is a crazy thing to be doing.
I can tell you, drugs being against the law has not significantly reduced people's willingness to use drugs. They're going to use them if they want to. I should know. I went to rehab. Drugs being illegal was never an issue for drug users. Not only that, our drug war is fueling drug wars in a number of countries, from Colombia to Afghanistan to Mexico. IraqCasualties.org shows Mexico's drug war alone has resulted in 70,000 deaths since 2006. That is more than 10 times the amount of Americans that have been killed in Iraq and Afghanistan. According to The Hill, today people incarcerated for a drug conviction comprise half of the federal prison population. Most aren't high-level actors or drug kingpins and have limited criminal records. There are more people serving life without parole sentences for drug crimes in federal prisons than for murder. So Jefferson, Beauregard, Sessions III's revived war on drugs and his newly issued sentencing directive onto federal prosecutors revoking the Vomer Smart on Crime initiative is more than just a step backwards in race relations and prison populations. It is a death sentence for countless numbers of people. I don't know a way to fight this. If you guys have any ideas, please let me know. To me, this all serves as further inspiration to fight Donald, resist this administration, and fight like hell to flip the House and the Senate in 2018. Oh yeah, and support Black Lives Matter whenever and wherever we can.
Good evening from the U.S. Capitol in Washington, where today the House of Representatives began its formal inquiry into the impeachment of President Nixon.
The great Barbara Jordan, the first African-American elected from Texas to the Senate, was 37 when she delivered these statements in a speech in 1974 during the impeachment hearings of one Richard M. Nixon.
The framers of this Constitution were very astute. They did not make the accusers and the judges the same person. We know the nature of impeachment. We've been talking about it a while now. It is chiefly designed for the president and his high ministers to somehow be called into account. It is designed to bridle the executive if he engages in excesses. It is designed as a method of national inquest into the conduct of public men. The framers confided in the Congress the power, if need be, to remove the president in order to strike a delicate balance between a president swollen with power and grown tyrannical and preservation of the independence of the executive.
And she wasn't alone. Beside her, perhaps with more courage, were the Republicans who chose country over party and set out to impeach their president, Republican Edward Hutchinson.
Today, the committee starts consideration of the most awesome power constitutionally vested in the House of Representatives. The power of impeachment is one of those great checks and balances written in our Constitution to ameliorate the stark doctrine of the separation of powers.
In the absence of heroes in Washington, we look to 2018.
History will recall Reagan and Bush did nothing at all!
History will recall Reagan and Bush did nothing at all!
Witnessing the largest demonstration ever in front of the Food and Drug Administration. We have an estimated 1,500 people here already.
No more business as usual! No more business as usual!
On October 11th, 1988, a group called ACT UP, an activist group fighting to bring national attention to the government's blatant refusal to acknowledge the AIDS pandemic in the largest such demonstration since demonstrations against the Vietnam War, shut down the Food and Drug Administration for a day. The Los Angeles Times at the time reported, quote, "The AIDS activists shut down the large facility by blocking doors, walkways, and a road as FDA workers reported to work. Police told some workers to go home rather than wade through the throng. Hey, FDA, how many people have you killed today?" chanted the crowd, estimated by protest organizers between 1,100 and 1,500. The protesters hoisted a black banner that read, "Federal Death Administration." Police officers wearing surgical gloves and helmets started rounding up the hundreds of demonstrators and herding them into buses shortly after 8:30 a.m. Some protesters blocked the buses from leaving for 20 minutes. Authorities arrested 120 protesters, and demonstration leaders said they were aiming for 300 arrests by day's end. Unquote. At this action, activists demonstrated their thorough knowledge of the FDA and drug approval process. ACT UP presented precise demands for the changes that would make experimental drugs available more quickly and more fairly. The success of the seize control of the FDA can, perhaps, be measured by what ensued the next year following the action. Government agencies dealing with AIDS, particularly the FDA and NIH, began to listen to activists and included them in decision-making. Editor-at-large of the newly minted HuffPost Queer Voices, an activist, Michelangelo Signorelli, writes, quote, The sacred floor of the New York Stock Exchange was invaded. The National Institutes of Health were stormed. The CBS Evening News was literally interrupted by an activist who got onto the set. Mass at St. Patrick's Cathedral by the virulent homophobe Cardinal O'Connor was stopped by Dians in the aisles of the iconic church. A giant condom was even lowered over the home of the late, horrifically anti-gay Republican Senator Jesse Helms of North Carolina. There were many die-ins, many sit-ins, and traffic was stopped over and over and over again in cities across America. We were called to every name in the book, but there was so much at risk, we had little to lose. ACT UP persevered and changed the course of history, a story that has been told many times in recent years. The atmosphere then, well, of a different time and a very different experience, appears similar in many ways to the one that we are living now, as we see the possibility of our democracy dying and of many people suffering. Unquote. Our deputy AG Rosenstein, who was a profile in cowardice, who was unanimously approved by the Senate, who completely blew up his own reputation in one day by bowing to his orange leader and firing Comey, is the hapless twerp who appears to be slow-walking the Russian investigation. Some reports say that Comey was not asking for more resources for the Russian investigation. According to NBC News, what he was asking for was prosecutors. Quote, "What we wanted, basically, was more prosecutors, more support from the Department of Justice for writing subpoenas and warrants and things like that," unquote, one congressional aide briefed on the matter said. Not having prosecutors is slowing down the FBI investigation, which is remarkable. He is also the one who would pick a special prosecutor, too. So, damn. I mean, what the hell are we going to do? Shut it down. I say we shut it down. Senate Democrats can refuse to consider the nomination of the new FBI director or block funding for Justice Department programs. They can go even further to slow Senate business down to a crawl, continue blocking every unanimous consent request, refusing cooperation on any legislation, and anything and everything else until an independent prosecutor is appointed. And I don't know if I trust Rosenstein to pick a prosecutor, but smart, strong liberal voices say that is our next step. So, hell, let's fight for it. Regardless, a shutdown of the government is called for. Why are we continuing to do business as usual when our president and the complicit Republican Party is under investigation for colluding with Russia to overthrow the election? This is crazy. His nominations are illegitimate, as they were made by an illegitimate president. Were our corrupt Republican Congress elected under Nixon, Nixon would have finished his term and been the Speaker of Honor at the next Republican convention. This is bananas. Why aren't we rioting in the streets? We are at town halls. We are in the streets. We are on the phone and online. And these are efforts that we cannot waver in, but that is not enough anymore. It is time to stop being polite. We need to be at politicians' offices. We need to be at their homes and at dinners and at their parties. More than just politicians, we need to be disrupting the lives of the White House aides, cabinet members, conservative think tanks, pro-Trump bloggers, columnists, and talking heads. These enablers who would allow and promote the continued rise of this illegitimate president and his administration. The GOP members who enable a president who would tear the fabric of our democracy, who would lie and who would cheat and who would collude with a foreign country, who would profit off the backs of Americans, who would demean and disparage his own country. These Republicans who would strip the poor of their health care to fund the rich and the privileged, who would line their oil-soaked pockets at the expense of future generations. The time has come. With this recent Comey firing, as his people arrest reporters and unconstitutionally abuse and incarcerate the people of color and the poor, the time has come to meet them at the theater. At the club, at the gym. I am going to read directly from Signorelli. Paul Ryan, The House Speaker should not be able to attend any function, eat in public, or enjoy dinner at home without hearing people express how his actions are harming their lives and their families' lives in terrible ways. This may sound too extreme and out of bounds to some people, but Donald Trump is not operating within bounds, nor is anyone who is enabling him. We must fight back with equal force. But let me be clear. I'm, of course, not calling for violence or any of the thuggish behavior of the Trump supporters during the campaign. I'm calling for what ACT UP, the life-saving AIDS activist group with which I was involved, did in the 80s and 90s when our lives were at stake, when people were dying around us, and when the government allowed the deaths because they believed nobody cared about dying and dead queer. You don't need a large crowd, but you do need an idea that grips the people, puts the target on notice, displays passion, makes a spectacle, and says, no more business as usual. Desperate times call for desperate measures. For civil disobedience, call for desperate measures and for civil disobedience in the tradition of the civil rights movement. Democrats who don't push hard should be targeted too. Right now, all business in the Senate should be made to stop immediately by Democrats. For example, until we have a special counsel on the Trump-Russia probe, which Democrats have called for, and we have to make them do it. And then he says, playing nice right now is like signing a death warrant. So I'm imploring some in the resistance to up the ante. Everything that has already been undertaken, the marches, the phone calls to Congress, the letter writing, the protests, the town halls, putting up candidates for House races has been powerful and needs to continue. But it is time to also be more forceful and captivating. The firing of Comey is an audacious turn towards fascism and must be stopped before it is too late. We are now fighting for our lives as we know them. There is no time to waste. Unquote. Should you like to find yourself a politician, go to politicalpartytime.org for their party schedule. I've also posted that on my Facebook page at K-Voice of Resistance. That is politicalpartytime.org. In 1973, the CIA sponsored a coup d'etat led by General Augusto Pinochet against the democratically elected president of Chile, Salvador Allende. Following the coup, Pinochet began to implement the first economic reforms to the country. Public institutions such as education, healthcare, and pensions were privatized, says our president. And the holy roller, Betsy DeVos, our education secretary, moved to further dismantle the public education system and impose privatized pro-capitalist model of education. The Chilean mobilization against the dictatorship can provide a guide for the defense of public services in the United States.
Once again, protests which begin peacefully in Chile erupt in violence. Police try to break up huge crowds swarming the streets of Santiago. These are teachers and students demanding free education for everyone.
What we are demanding is that education be taken from the municipalities and that it come directly from the national government.
In 2011, tens of thousands of students took to the streets to demand free public education. The movement looked to challenge the privatized educational system that was established by the Pinochet dictatorship. Privatization denied an affordable, quality educational system to the majority of Chileans. Charter schools. In 2013, Michelle Bachelet's victory, buoyed by the student movement, led to huge changes in Chile, including free higher education to 50% of the country's poor. This was achieved through a 25% corporate tax in order to raise money for public education. Activism worked. And activism worked again when pensioners and community activist demonstrations got Bachelet to announce that her administration would overhaul the Pinochet-era privatized pension system. This defense of public services, such as education, is already well established in the United States. Teachers of Chicago Teachers Union have led the charge to protect the public education system. Their movement has been strengthened through their connections with teachers in Mexico and in South America. These relationships need to be strengthened across the country as the struggle to defend public services heats up in the coming months. We can draw inspiration from and have connections with South America in the fight for territorial autonomy as well. See, within the first weeks of his administration, our esteemed president systematically dismantled legislation to protect the environment from mining activities, pipelines, and hydro energy, which will continue to threaten indigenous land. The movement at Standing Rock began to build bridges to these communities across the hemisphere. At the height of the encampment, indigenous leaders from countries like Guatemala and Mexico traveled to South Dakota to share their experiences and lessons from their movements. Among the primary messages that the indigenous leaders brought was their struggles. And their enemies were one and the same. In this sense, the camp became the point of interchange between indigenous peoples from Latin America and from around the world. Despite the camp's destruction in February, the foundations for long resistance to protect indigenous land have been put into place. And then there's the labor movement. It is no secret that those blue-collar workers who voted for Donald and his anti-labor cabinet were duped. In 2001, there was an economic crisis in Argentina that forced millions out of work and led to the collapse of the financial services, which triggered the Picatero, or picketer movement. This mobilization brought together vast numbers of impoverished, unemployed workers to demand and obtain a sustainable livelihood. Protesters adopted the slogan, Que se vayan todos, or they all must go. They sought to replace the corrupt political system that led to the 2001 crisis. In the course of 2 weeks, four presidents were forced to resign due to the popular protest. Furthermore, the movement contributed to the emergence of direct democracy on street corners where neighbors would come out and work together to resolve problems within their neighborhoods. Workspaces were recuperated by employees who returned to work to find doors locked and shuttered businesses. Following the crisis, more than 180 cooperatives were formed by their workers. And by 2014, this number had expanded to 311 businesses that employed 13,462 workers. I got much of this information from Jeff Abbott's article in Waging Nonviolence. You see, our democracy is being deconstructed, and in fact, we have been downgraded to a flawed democracy. But I think we have a chance, once we take our country back, to reconstruct our democracy. But we need to learn from our own past and from the rest of the world so that we can do better this time. Perhaps in the end, our country can come out better for all this. But it's going to take open minds and a willingness to learn. Thank you for listening to my show, K Voice of Resistance on the Crab Diving Network, or on your favorite podcasting app. Leave me a review or a thumbs up, or star me. It would be much appreciated. Catch the crabs with Ryan Pfeiffer and Patrick Vile on their flagship show, The Crab Diving Podcast on the Crab Diving Network, for your news 5 days a week, live from 2 to 4, or as a podcast wherever it is you pod. I'll leave you with this. This past weekend was the anniversary of the death of Sophie Scholl. Sophie Scholl was executed for leading a student revolt against Hitler in 1942. Her last words were, quote, "How can we expect righteousness to prevail when there is hardly anyone willing to give himself up individually to righteous cause? Such a fine sunny day, and I have to go. But what does my death matter if through us thousands of people are awakened and stirred to action?" Unquote. I'll have a new show for you guys on Friday. Until then, take care of yourselves out there. And as always, resist.
Resist.
History will recall Reagan and Bush did nothing at all.
We are confronted primarily with a moral issue. It is as old as the scriptures and is as clear as the American Constitution. The heart of the question is whether all Americans are to be afforded equal rights and equal opportunities. Whether we are going to treat our fellow Americans as we want to be treated. If an American, because his skin is dark, cannot eat lunch in a restaurant open to the public, if he cannot send his children to the best public school available, if he cannot vote for the public officials who represent him, if in short he cannot enjoy the full and free life which all of us want, then who among us would be content to have the color of his skin changed and stand in his place? who among us would then be content with a counsels of patience and delay?